I mentioned at the beginning that we are already on the sixth day of the octave of Christmas. So if you're counting the 12 days of Christmas, we're at the halfway point already. But I think here in the Philippines, no one thinks about the sixth day of the octave of Christmas on December 30th, because today is a national holiday. So more people are aware that it's Rizal Day than that it's the sixth day of the octave of Christmas. So, Happy Rizal Day. Is that a correct way of greeting people on Rizal Day? Happy Rizal Day. Now, I know about half the people here are not here for Rizal Day. They're here because it's the birthday of Evelinda. So happy birthday, Evelinda. And your relatives are here to celebrate with you. And we're here to celebrate with you also. So, see, the liturgy has its own rhythm, and cultures have their own rhythm, and families have their own rhythm. It all works together if we're attentive. When it comes to Rizal Day, I had to look it up, and maybe every year I do this. I can't remember if it's his birthday or his death anniversary, but it's his death anniversary. He was executed by the Spanish government, colonial government, on this day in 1896. So this is 129th death anniversary of Jose Rizal. And the Spanish, as you know, almost immediately regretted the execution of Rizal, because it turned him into a, he was already a hero because of his literary work and because of his brilliance, but then he became a martyr for the cause of Philippine independence, and that was one of the triggers of the revolution. So, and this happens in almost every place where there's colonialism. Colonial powers end up making an enemy out of somebody who becomes the hero, who ends up becoming the catalyst for freedom. Anyway, so that's the celebration of Rizal Day. In the liturgy, we follow the writings of St. John largely. We celebrated his feast day on Saturday, St. John the Apostle and Evangelist. And I remember saying how unique John is, how different his writings are, how profound his insights are. And today's selection from his first letter is another one of these examples of how different his style is. In this case, he seems to repeat himself. He speaks to the children, then he speaks to the fathers, then he speaks to the young men. Then he speaks to the children again. He says almost the same thing. He speaks to the fathers again. He says the same thing again. Then he speaks to the young men. He said, what is this? He keeps going round and round. And he does this on a lot of themes. If you notice in John's letters, he speaks very often about light. He speaks very often about the commandment of love. And these themes are really central to his writings. It just happens that there are children and young men here. And they happen to be addressed by the letter of St. John. But I would like to focus on the second part of this passage, where St. John speaks about the contrast between the love of the world and the love of the Father. Very clear distinction between love of the world and love of the Father. For some reason it stands out to me, maybe because the world is so prominent nowadays with the social media and just the whole tenor of the times is all about the world, and there's not that much interest in the love of the Father these days. Well, but John says, do not love the world or the things of the world. Meaning, it doesn't mean we can't appreciate the world, but we can't give our hearts to what will not give us happiness. He says, if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. It's one or the other. All that is in the world, and then he mentions these three things that are in the world, the traps of the world: sensual lust, enticement for the eyes, and a pretentious life. That's not from the Father, that's from the world. And to fall into any of these, sensual lust, enticement for the eyes, or a pretentious life, is to be in a trap that prevents us from enjoying the love of the Father, and enjoying what the Christmas season is all about. Now, it's pretty obvious what the first two are referring to. If you think about it, sensual lust is on display everywhere, or temptations to lust are on display everywhere in the world. It's a very lustful time. The second one, enticement for the eyes, that's typically materialism. So any invitation to think that if you possess something, whether it's what, fancy clothes or jewelry or cars or whatever, that you'll be happy. And that's everywhere in the world too. In fact, it's even more prominent at the Christmas time, because everybody's thinking that the shopping and gift giving is going to bring us happiness, enticement for the eyes. So advertising is all about enticement for the eyes. But the third one, a pretentious life, that one might not seem as obvious, but I think it's actually the most significant. The pretentious life, it's the whole mentality of the world, not just the attraction of sensual pleasures or attraction of material things, but the whole mentality of the world. And this is what you get in the social media. It's everywhere. And it interferes with our appreciation of the love of God. I was sent just today an article about the shortage of ube in the Philippines. I never heard there was an ube shortage. Did you hear about this? It's in the New York Times. Apparently, the Philippines is by far the biggest ube producer in the world. So ube is natural to the Philippines, maybe some other Southeast Asian countries, but it's not even known in most of the world. But apparently, it's because of its purple color, it's attracted the attention of social media influencers, and so somebody, makes ube pancakes or something, and then they post it on their Instagram or they post it on some social media, and then they say, "This, look at this," and because of the color, it attracts people's eye, and then it attracts people's interest, and then apparently there's an international, there's a big boom in international demand for ube, largely coming from the United States. Half of the exports of ube go to the United States now. I didn't know anything about this, but I think it's just another example of how the world works. Like, ube is not that. I mean, it's not that. I mean, the color is interesting. The taste is not that particularly interesting. I mean, it's nothing like a pineapple or something, or a mango or something delicious. But anyway, I have nothing against ube, but it's not an international phenomenon. It's more like a curiosity. But anyway, because of the world making things that are not that important into something very important, or attracting the attention of people, when things go viral, most things that go viral are not that important. It's just a wave of worldly influence. That's what I think John is referring to here. Pretentious life. Show. The life of show. If you want to know what pretentiousness is, just look at the media. Social media and all the media. They're always show off. Show off. Attract your attention. That's the world. And that's not from the Father, to show off. That's not why Jesus came into the world. That's not why the baby was born, to show off. He came for our sake, not for his own sake, to reveal God's love to us, not to reveal himself as someone to go viral. Well, in the tradition of the church, these three enemies that we find in the world are countered by the evangelical counsels: poverty, chastity, obedience. Sensual lust, clearly opposed by chastity. Enticement for the eyes, clearly opposed by poverty. Pretentious life then is countered by obedience, meaning submission to God, submission to the authority of God, and not to the waves of influencers. Okay, there's a lot that we could reflect on there. I just think it's a good reminder to us in the Christmas season of what is really of value and what is not. Because what the world presents to us as being really valuable, what will really make us happy, is a lot of empty show, a lot of pretentious life, or a lot of enticement, advertising. So the sooner we learn that all the glitter all the advertising, as soon as we learn that it's not really going to make us happy, the better off we are. But then we have to say, well, what will make us happy? That's where we have to discover the will of God. The will of God is what is really fulfilling, what's really exciting, what's really, that's the real adventure of life, is to discover God's will and to follow it. The example for today is the Prophetess Anna. Today's gospel focuses on her. This is a continuation from yesterday. We're pondering the event of the presentation of Jesus in the temple. When he was 40 days old, he was brought to the temple. Mary and Joseph brought the child, Jesus, to the temple, and they met Simeon, who we heard about yesterday, and Anna, who we hear about today. Now, Anna, like Simeon, is a senior citizen. She was married for 7 years, then widowed, and now she's already 84 years old. She's not looking for satisfaction in the world. She's not trying to satisfy sensual lust, enticement for the eyes, or a pretentious life. In fact, probably no one ever noticed her. Who knew Anna? She was spending her time in prayer, spending her time at the temple. She was withdrawn from the world. In fact, although she's not officially a representative of the consecrated life, but she is a model for consecrated life. Well, we have one consecrated sister here, so as an example. Anna is pointed to in the scriptures as someone who's wholly dedicated to the Lord. She finds her identity in the Lord. She finds her joy in the Lord. She doesn't have to run around the world. She doesn't have to be on her phone all day. She has the Lord. And anyway, she comes to the temple. Now, unlike Simeon, who was inspired by the Holy Spirit to come at a certain time to meet the one he was longing for, in the case of Anna, she was always there anyway. She didn't have to be inspired. She was already fully dedicated so was Simeon, but Simeon wasn't apparently living at the temple, whereas Anna was there day and night in fasting and prayer. So it says she came forward at that very time and gave thanks to God and spoke about the child to all who were awaiting the redemption of Jerusalem. Now, she probably heard what Simeon said, or perhaps she heard what the Lord said in her own heart, but she identified that this child, this 40-day-old child, is the Messiah. This is the one for whom we have been waiting for generations. So her heart rejoices in the Lord. And this is why she's presented to us as a Christmas figure. This is the joy of Anna is our joy. We rejoice at Christmas time, not because it's just because it's a vacation time or because we receive gifts, but because of the Lord. He's here. So she gave thanks to God. Okay, love of God. And she spoke about the child to all who were awaiting the redemption of Jerusalem. That is, love of neighbor. Love of God, love of neighbor. Here it is, on display in a very simple but profound way in the life of Anna. Anna also reminds us that senior citizens are of a very rich treasure for the church. Oh, our birthday girl is a senior citizen now. Right? You're over 60, right? 61. Okay, see, 61. So, and actually almost everybody here, except for all these opposed and the relatives, are all seniors. So the scriptures reveal seniors, even though in the world, in the eyes of the world, seniors are of little value because they're of no interest for sensual lust, they're of no interest for enticement for the eyes, and they don't live a pretentious life. Seniors and the mentality of the world are already used up. They're already expired. They're no value to the world. They can't work. They can't make any money. They don't look good. They can't be used for business opportunities. That's the end. That's the world's mentality. But the Lord's idea is completely different. And that's why Anna is a good counterpoint to this description of the world. Anna is 84 years old. Probably she's walking more slowly, maybe she's stooped a little bit, maybe her hearing, maybe she can't hear as well. That doesn't matter. What matters is she's rejoicing in the Lord. And so she's showing us what's of real value and real cause of our joy. the coming of the Lord. So she rejoices, and she invites everyone to rejoice, including us. So on this sixth day of the octave of Christmas, on this resolved day, we continue to rejoice in the Lord.